We have the cracker of the show for you tonight, gals and gents. Wash your black heads, sniff some borax, and enjoy this episode of The Weird Circle entitled A Niche of Doom.
I demand that time cease. The past will return and the stories of yesterday unfold. Listen to The Weird Circle.
Out of the past, phantoms of a world gone by, speak again the immortal tale, The Niche of Doom.
Will it never stop, this constant tapping inside my mind? Yes, I've listened to that same hopeless tapping for days on end. I thought it would stop when I came to this rest home. Here in my room, my husband sits on the edge of my bed, watching me, knowing my thoughts, feeding me horror, tearing at the fabric of my mind as a spider tears the wings off its prey. My husband, Auguste Marais. My husband, my torturer, my captor, my murderer. A woman has a right to live, to laugh, to smile and be happy. A right to love and be loved. And I was lonely. I remember the day I was in the patio attending to my tulip bulbs, talking to my maid Rosalie as I spaded the earth.
Oh, madame, the garden looks just beautiful.
Yes, it does. I love this garden, Rosalie. It's the one thing in this entire dreary house I can call my own.
If the tulip bulbs work as nicely as they did last year, perhaps Monsieur Marais will allow you to enter them in the garden contest.
I meant to ask him.
Good day, Josephine. How are you feeling today?
Well, I feel fine, August. I didn't expect you so early.
You may go, Rosalie.
Yes, sir. Anything I can do for you, madame?
No, nothing, my dear.
Yes, madame.
You're looking very well, Josephine. Very well.
August.
You've something on your mind? What is it?
August, I was wondering if you'd mind frightfully if I entered my tulip bulbs in the annual country exhibition.
Mind? Naturally, I mind. You know very well I don't like you making an exhibition of my name in public.
But August, just entering the tulip...
I will not discuss it.
But it's so lonely here all the time.
Lonely? Nonsense. You've the maid for company?
Yes, I've Rosalie.
And I manage to spend one evening a week with you?
Yes, I know you do.
My dear, you should be very grateful that you have the position in life which marrying me has given you.
I have everything but happiness, August.
Happiness is relative. A girl born in the circumstances in which you were born, a poor, unimportant family, certainly cannot expect everything.
But I ask so little, August, just to exhibit the bulbs and the flowers.
I thought we were not going to discuss this anymore. You know very well the doctor told me at my age I'm not to allow myself to become excited.
Yes, I remember what the doctor said.
I'm glad. Please remember it. And now, my dear, I really must go over to court.
Will you be home this evening, August?
I'm never home on Tuesdays, Josephine. Enjoy yourself, my dear. Don't wear yourself out in the patio. You country girls are always lovely while you're young, but you age so quickly.
Age so quickly. He frightened me. I saw all the years of my youth passing me by as I was caged up in the house on the Rue Montmartre. I was only 15 when I married August. 15, and he was 55 then. 5 years of marriage had taught me the meaning of loneliness and tears. A woman has the right to bask in the warmth of her youth. That's why I left the house that day. I wandered out into the garden patio outside my room, and I walked down the boulevard to Grinnell's Cafe. I sat down at a table on the sidewalk, intending only to watch the others, to watch life pass by. The waiter was very friendly.
What will you have, madame?
An ice, a raspberry ice?
A raspberry ice. Excellent, madame. Excellent for a warm afternoon.
How angry this would make August.
Sitting all alone, madame?
Yes, I... Well, because I wish to be alone.
Oh, no, you don't. Not when you've the opportunity to enjoy my company.
Please, sir, I shall call a waiter.
No, don't, please. You're lonely and I'm lonely. Certainly there can be no harm in two lonely people sharing a table for one short half hour. Now, can there?
But my husband...
Even a jealous husband can't object.
Really, sir?
And you are lonely. You really want me to sit down, you just won't admit it. Oh, I can see the truth in your face.
You see things that are not there.
May I, madame? Just for one half hour.
Well, there really is no harm in it, is there?
None at all. Thank you. Of course, madame, you know that I've lied to you.
Lied to me?
Your ice, madame. Something for you, monsieur?
Same as the lady.
Oui, monsieur.
Nothing like raspberry ice to start a lifelong friendship.
What do you mean you've lied to me?
Well, I didn't just happen along just now. I didn't just happen to see you sitting here and come up. I planned everything very carefully in advance.
Oh?
You see, madame, I live across the way from you. I've watched you gardening in the patio of your home many times.
But why, monsieur?
Why? Why, because you're a beautiful woman. Because I wanted to know you so very much. Because I've seen something in your eyes that I've felt inside myself.
You shouldn't, monsieur. You really shouldn't say these things to me.
My name's Pierre Planton.
Monsieur, for both our sakes, do leave me now. You've no idea how much trouble this innocent little adventure might cause us later on.
Oh, I've waited a long time to meet you, dear lady. Not just a day or a week or weeks, but a year.
I'm very flattered, Monsieur Planton.
Pierre is the name.
Pierre?
You know, the first day I saw you in the garden, I asked my servant who you were. And when I found out you were married, I resolved never to try to see you again, but...
Why did you change your mind?
I saw your husband.
August is a very fine, upstanding man.
He told you so himself, eh?
Why, no, I really think so.
He's an old, garrulous, stupid bore who's overwhelmed with his own importance.
Oh,
frankly, my curiosity's aroused. Why did a lovely young girl like yourself ever marry him?
Well, I loved him.
Oh, madame, please don't cry, please. If there's one thing that turns my bone to water, it's a beautiful woman's tears. Here,
I'm not crying.
Oh, here, use my handkerchief for these non-existent tears, then.
Thank you.
Now, Josephine, smile.
Stop ordering me about. I won't have it.
Please smile at me and say I'm forgiven.
You're forgiven.
Oh, that's better. I promise to be nice. You see, Josephine, believe it or not, I'm very fond of you, against my better judgment. You'd better believe it, because I'll haunt you every day if you don't.
And that's the way it started. Just a talk in a sidewalk cafe. My first friend, perhaps the only friend I had besides Rosalie. At first, Pierre and I thought we were just playing at love. But by the end of the second week, I knew the truth. I loved him. I loved him as deeply and as truly as any woman could. We met in the afternoons in the cafe, and in the evenings when August was out, he stole into the patio and we talked. Talked of him and of me, and then of us. Of our future. Together. It was Tuesday, 2 weeks ago, that he was supposed to arrive at 9 o'clock. Rosalie was helping me dress.
You'd better hurry, madame. You'll be here in half an hour.
How do I look, Rosalie?
Beautiful. I wish I were as beautiful as you. Oh, madame, put this brooch in the front of the dress. It sparkles so.
Yes. Yes, I think I will. Rosalie, he's so handsome and so fine.
And you really and truly love him?
Really and truly.
But what will you do, madame?
I don't know. If I could only be honest with August, if I could only tell him and break away.
Oh, madame, he'll kill Monsieur Pierre.
Yes, I know. He'd be well within his rights. I'm so frightened sometimes. So very frightened.
Oh, madame. Listen, footsteps. That's August outside my room.
What will you do?
I don't know. Perhaps he'll leave before Pierre.
But if he doesn't,
then what? Then you must pretend that Pierre is your friend.
Oh.
Well, look at my lovely wife tonight. Dressed up, aren't you, my dear?
Good evening, August. I always dress in the evenings, you know that.
No, I didn't. I shall hereafter take more advantage of your loveliness.
Oh, flatter me, my lord. I didn't expect you to drop in to see me this evening.
Were you expecting someone else?
Why, how unfair you are, sir.
Unfair? No, I'm, shall we say, more curious than unfair.
You may leave, Madame Rosalie.
Madame, I...
What's the matter with you, girl? Why do you stand there staring like that?
Well, it's the...
Rosalie is expecting a visitor in my patio shortly, August.
A visitor? Yes. Rosalie?
Yes.
Well, that's different. A lover, eh? I suppose you'll be getting married soon, eh, girl?
Well, yes. Yes,
more's the pity. Mind if I sit down a little, Josephine?
No, do, my lord.
I suppose you'll be leaving, madame and myself, shortly. You should have told me, girl.
Well, I had...
You what?
I didn't think, monsieur.
If you'd told me, I'd have supplied you with a decent dowry. A girl in your position can scarcely afford a trousseau.
It's very kind of you, monsieur, to offer me.
Well, my dear, no matter what, I shall be generous to you and offer your future husband a fair dowry anyway. What say you, Josephine? Is that not generous?
Very generous, my lord.
Ah, yes, it is. My girl, Rosalie, you shall be married in the Marais Chapel at noon Friday.
Friday, monsieur? So soon? 3 days?
Yes, Friday. A girl in love should be delighted at the prospect. Unless you've lied to me.
Lied to you? Oh, never, monsieur, never. I'm delighted. Delighted,
Yes, of course you are. Well, Josephine, you might help the young lady plan her wedding while I'm gone. And make a list of all the necessary items which you'll need.
Yes, my lord.
I shall leave the entire proceedings in your hands. That ought to keep you well occupied.
Yes, my lord. Are you leaving me so soon?
I have to, my dear. You know these Tuesday nights. You know them very well. Good night, Josephine. Give my best to your suitor, Rosalie, and tell him I'll do my best by you.
Oh, madame.
Shh.
Careful. August can be sly as a fox.
Friday,
yes, it's Friday. Rosalie, he's very clever. I don't know how he found out the news. At least he suspects.
What will we do, madame?
I don't know. There he is. Tell him to come up, Rosalie.
Yes, madame.
Come up, monsieur.
Is old spider leg gone?
Yes. Hurry, monsieur. Hurry.
I climbed to my love's balcony.
Oh, darling, darling, darling.
Dear, August is clever. He knows.
What? He knows? He told you so himself?
He came in this evening while I was dressing. I was afraid he might stay for the evening, so I told him about you.
You told him?
I said that you and Rosalie were engaged to be married.
Oh,
and
so...
And, monsieur, he insists we get married Friday in the Marais Chapel. He's going to provide my dowry.
You think he suspects you, Josephine?
I know he does. Darling, you must leave at once and never return.
Leave you and Rosalie to the mercy
we'll
of the...
We'll lie our way out.
Yes. I'll tell him my lover did not like to be rushed and quit me.
And he'd believe it just like that?
Of course.
Never. Never, Rosalie. No, no, that's not the answer. That's not even sensible. Darling, sooner or later we'd have to take our chances and run away. Why not now?
Run away? Where? How?
To Spain. He'd never find us in Spain.
I have no passport. I couldn't even leave the country. And as long as I'm in France, he'd find me and drag me back.
We'd find a way to leave the country. Oh, Spain is lovely at this time of year. Beautiful. The trees are heavy with lilac bloom. And you'd like Madrid, Josephine. It's like another world.
Madrid? If only...
If only what? If only you've the courage, we'll leave at once. Pack a few things quickly, and we'll hire a coach to take us to the border.
Tonight. Tonight, Pierre. Tonight.
Suitcase is closed, my darling. Where's your coat?
In the closet.
Oh, let's do hurry.
Lovely coat, isn't it?
Everything looks lovely on you.
Listen.
What is it?
My husband's footsteps in the hall.
Larry, I waited for him and he never showed up.
That's a pity, Rosalie. And I had such pleasant wedding plans.
Here, quickly hide in the closet. Take my coat and suitcase with you.
Of course.
Here, take it.
Don't be frightened, darling.
Madame hasn't been feeling well and she lay down, monsieur.
Well, she's probably lonely. I'll cheer her up. Josephine, I'm glad to see you looking well. Rosalie told me you were ill.
I had a bad headache.
What's that?
Nothing. August, I heard nothing.
In your closet. I heard something drop.
What could drop in a closet?
I don't know. You're better acquainted with your wardrobe than I am.
Of course, my lord.
You've so many headaches lately. Come, my dear, you'd best lie down and rest.
Of course, whatever you say, my lord.
You may go, Rosalie.
Yes, sir. Of course, sir.
I hope I didn't disturb your plans for the evening.
but the evening began to pall, so I returned home. Sometimes my friends can prove themselves quite dull. I was thinking of you and your beauty, and I was worried about you.
Worried about me? In what way, August?
Oh, in the last 2 weeks, two of my friends have told me that they've seen you walking down the street alone, unchaperoned.
Have they?
Not that I listen to idle chatter, my dear. I don't. You know that.
People talk. They have so little else to do.
Naturally, I understand that. But then, a very close friend of mine was at the Café Grenald a few days ago. He, has told me something that rather puzzled me. You look a little pale, my dear.
My headache.
Naturally, your headache. He said he was sitting in the café and he noticed a woman who looks remarkably like you walk in and sit at a corner table.
A woman who looked like me?
She sat for a while all alone. Later, a man, a young man, joined her. He sat by her side. He called her Josephine, your name. Remarkable that a woman who looks like you should have the same name as you.
Yes, it is remarkable. Quite coincidental.
That's what I thought, coincidental. I might even have thought that woman was you, if I didn't know better. Know that you're a dutiful wife, my dear.
Of course, August.
For a little while, believe me, I was rather worried. I began to think about the habits and customs of country women. And putting that together with your temporary restlessness lately... Well, for a while, my dear, I thought perhaps in your moments of weakness you had perhaps acquired an admirer.
Please, August.
But naturally you haven't?
No, I haven't.
Then when I walked in your room just now and I saw you looking so nervous, flushed, for a second I thought perhaps your, admirer was here in this room with you.
Did you?
It was just a passing thought. Naturally, knowing you've a headache, I realized that the flushed expression comes from that.
Yes, it does.
Then again, when I heard that peculiar clatter in the closet, a strange idea was born. I thought perhaps your friend, the friend you met at the cafe, might be hiding in the closet. You look pale, Josephine.
Do I?
Is someone hiding in the closet?
No.
I naturally will take your word. If someone is in that closet, my dear, I should be forced to protect your honor and do away with it. Would you swear to me now on the Bible that there is no one hiding in the closet?
Please, August, put away that dueling pistol.
Then you are prepared to swear before God on the Holy Bible that no one is hiding in that closet?
Yes, August.
Ring for your maid, my dear.
Why?
I said ring for her.
Yes, my lord.
Now, fetch me your Bible. You have your Bible in the room, my dear, haven't you?
Yes, my lord, it's right here at my bedside.
Put your left hand on it. That's right. And swear on the Holy Bible there is no other man in this room besides myself.
I swear there is no other man in this room besides yourself, my lord.
Ah, my mind is much relieved. Much relieved.
You rang for me, madame?
I did, Rosalie. Do you know where Monsieur de Gorenflot lives?
Mason, monsieur?
Yes, the Mason, monsieur. I want to write a little note to him, and I want you to deliver it at once. Fetch me paper and a quill, Josephine.
Yes, my lord, I have a quill right here. Here's paper.
Ah, that's just the thing. You've learned to sharpen quills quite well, my love. Dear Monsieur Gorenflot, I am writing to you because...
Yes, that's what happened on that fatal Tuesday night. I perjured my soul, and I've paid for it. How little did I realize how much I had to pay. Rosalie left the room and delivered the note as she was bidden. My lord and I were left alone. He bade me retire to bed as I looked poorly, and said that he personally would remain with me until my headache left. I assured him my health was much improved, but he would not have it so. I retired to bed, and he sat by my side until...
Monsieur Mary, Monsieur Gorenflot is here.
Come in, Gorenflot.
I've done as you bid me, monsieur. I've brought the cement and the paving tools.
Good work, Gorenflot. Come, bring them in here.
In here, monsieur? In madame's room?
Yes, in here.
Why, August? Why?
Rosalie, go to bed, girl, and get a good night's sleep. You don't have to linger around any longer.
Yes, sir.
Monsieur Gorenflot, you see that closet in the corner?
Yes, my lord.
I wish you to cement it up. The sight of it affects my wife quite strangely.
August!
Please, my dear.
But August!
You swore to me there was no one in it, my dear beloved wife. And I believe you. Surely there's no harm in sealing up such an offensive, ugly closet. I'll have another one built for you.
But my clothes...
I shall buy you new ones. What are you waiting for, Monsieur Gorenflot?
My lord, at this hour of the night, you...
You are sure you want me to do this now, monsieur?
Wait till morning, my lord.
I am positive, absolutely positive, my poor Gorenflot. Go to work at once. I will not wait. I am a man of whims. Strange, interesting world.
Whim. August knew that my lover hid in there. I didn't think he'd have the heart to go through with what he had intended. So at first I just sat quietly by and watched. Gorenflot laid first one row of bricks, and then another, and then a third, and then a fourth. Pierre was afraid by now. He preferred quick, certain death to slow starvation, and he began knocking on the door and calling out.
Please!
Gorenflot, petrified, stopped and he said...
Monsieur Marais.
Go ahead, Monsieur Gorenflot. There's no one in that closet. My wife has assured me there's no one.
August! August!
And I'm within my rights, Monsieur Gorenflot. Proceed at once. Proceed!
As you say, Monsieur Marais.
Please, open it!
Yes, as he says, he was within his rights to do exactly as he pleased. The fifth row slowly fell in place, and the sixth. And then I knew that August meant to see that night's work finished. The seventh. I cried, I wept, I tore at his coat, I pleaded, I entreated. It was all no use at all. Small beads of perspiration shone on Gorenflot's forehead as he worked. And the rows kept going up, one by one, until morning, when the entire job was done.
Thank you, Monsieur Gorenflot. Here is 2,000 francs for your work and your silence. My wife's good name must not be bantered about in public.
Thank you, monsieur. Thank you.
How could you be such a beast?
Come, come, my dear. Dry your eyes. The offending closet is sealed up.
August, there's a man inside. There is. How could you deny it?
You're lying to me, Josephine. You swore there wasn't. I must believe an oath taken on a Bible.
Oh. Listen, don't you hear him?
Yes, but my ears deceive me.
He's calling out. August, please take my life. But don't let him die in there.
Ah, my dear, there's no one in that closet. Remember what you said? Ring for your maid, Josephine.
My maid? Rosalie!
I said ring for her, not cry out for her.
Of course I'll ring for her. August, be human. Please be human.
I've been more than human, Josephine. I've been godly. I've accepted your word as absolute truth. Don't come in, Rosalie. I shall see you at the doorway. Stay right out here, my dear. That's right. Instruct the butler and all the servants that Madame and I will remain in her room for at least a month. And our meals are to be served by my private valet.
Yes, monsieur.
And otherwise, we're not to be disturbed by anyone.
Yes, monsieur. For 30 days, 30 nights. For 30 days and 30 nights, I heard that tapping on the wall. His cries, his moans, his words, his pleas, I heard them there. August was stone, completely stone. He didn't care. He just sat and watched me. Watched my face, enjoyed my terror. Fed me horror, waiting daily for the cries that issued out. August, how can you? How can you be like this? He's there, Pierre, he's there. He's behind the wall.
My dear, you must be ill.
Listen to him. He's dying there. Each day his strength grows less. And as he dies, I must die too. August. Please, in heaven's name, be kind, be merciful. Forgive me, let him go.
There's no one there. I'll call the maid. You'll need her care.
No one there. Listen. Tapping stopped. stop. Murderer! You pig! You beast! You killed him!
You're ill, my dear. So ill, poor girl. Come in.
Call me, my lord.
Please call the doctor, Rosalie. My wife is ill. She's going away for a long rest. A very long rest.
So I sit here in this rest home, listening to the feeble tapping inside my head. The same feeble tapping I heard on the closet wall of my bedroom at home. That same feeble tapping. Will it never stop?
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have brought to you the story of the Niche of Doom. Bellkeeper, toll the bell.
Sansquatchy Tanapple. Well, have you? Welcome back to Ricky Jin's All-Time Radio. Now enjoy this episode of Crime Classics entitled The Checkered Life and Sudden Death of Colonel James Fisk Jr.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland. I'm going to tell you another true crime story. Listen. The man who just fell down the stairs is Colonel James Fisk, Jr. Although the Colonel is a man given to the consumption of dozens of Blue Point oysters and bottles of heady wine at a sitting, his friends were given to pointing him out as a man inordinately steady on his feet. So why did he tumble down the stairs? And in New York's Grand Central Hotel, no less, where stair tumbling was frowned upon, the Colonel didn't slip. He wasn't pushed. He was shot. The sudden presence of two bullets in him had upset his equilibrium. The man who's running away is the man who just shot the Colonel. His name, Edward S. Stokes, until recently the Colonel's very dear friend. There he goes. And tonight, my report to you on the checkered life and sudden death of Colonel James Fisk, Jr.
Crime Classics, a series of true crime stories taken from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. And now once again, Thomas Highland.
Colonel Fisk lay at the bottom of the stairs a few minutes before 4 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, January the 6th, 1872. He was dying. His life was coming to an end. And he would be sorely missed by his family, Mrs. Fisk, and the children, among whom were Jay Gould, Boss Tweed, and the heavier stockholders of the day. A man dying, and I know the precise instant when his dying began. It started some months ago in a rather ornate house in Washington Square. Two women were talking, and the younger one said,
"Annie, how can I meet Colonel Fisk?"
That was the instant. And the older one said, but the younger one was not young enough to take Deary for an answer.
"I mean it, Annie. I want to meet him."
He's so wealthy, isn't he?
And all I have is a black and white silk dress and an empty purse. So very empty, dear Annie.
Oh, often's in the rain, an empty purse has saddened me so, dear Josie.
And I've heard he's coming here tonight to visit with you.
The dear Colonel says I set such a good table. Dear Josie.
Yes?
Walk over there to that cabinet, dear Josie. In the very bottom drawer, you will find two candlesticks given to me by the minister from Egypt. Get them. Yes, now put them on the table. Mm-hmm. And light them. Good. Now blow them out, gently.
Well, Annie?
Dear Josie, will you join the dear Colonel and me for dinner tonight?
So nice of you to ask. I'd be delighted, dear Annie.
So it was that Colonel Fisk and Josie Mansfield met.
I kiss your hand, Josie.
You're a very sweet man.
Isn't she a dear?
So lovely.
And so poor.
So sad.
The Colonel was a man easily touched. And this was the era for young widows, beautiful and penniless. It was the era for weeping at the mere thought of such a situation. It was a decade of compassion and champagne. And this night, the meeting night, was one of the most poignant of the decade.
Tomorrow, Josie, a jewel to lie against the throat.
Oh, Colonel.
My carriage will call for you at noon and bring you to me.
The necklace counter?
Of course, my dear. More wine? Look at it, dear. Do you like it?
It's very nice.
And it's all yours.
Oh, thank you. I've always wanted a home of my own. And servants of my own.
Six.
Kiss me, Colonel.
Good evening, Colonel.
Evening, Quimby. This is Mr. Stokes.
May I take your cane, sir?
Thank you, Quimby.
Triss is in the drawing room. She's waiting for you.
This way, Stokes.
Hello, Colonel. And you must be the Colonel's best friend, Mr. Stokes.
I hope this is no imposition, ma'am.
Preparing dinner? Certainly not. I just sat here all day, listening to the new present the Colonel sent me. While the servants made ready.
Do you like the new music box, my dear?
It reminds me of you when you're away from me.
Such a pretty speech. How fortunate you are, Colonel.
Oh, wait till you taste her pheasant a la Esther.
I can hardly wait.
Excuse me for a moment.
Where are you going, Colonel?
I left a small package for you out in the carriage, my dear. And
oh, of course, we'll excuse you. So, you're Mr. Stokes. I must say he was right. You are elegant.
He was right. You are very lovely. And you're...
What?
You are.
Will you help me light the candles?
Josie.
Will you help me with the fireplace?
Josie.
The music box is run down. Will you...
Josie.
You won't help me with anything. You're wicked. You're very wicked.
Mr. Edward Stokes was 5 feet 9 inches high. His head was covered with glossy curls, his complexion clear, his features regular, and his eyes dark blue. He was dressed in the height of fashion. and his diamond studs gleamed brilliantly. And after the colonel returned with a forgotten package...
Oh, a ruby pendant. Thank you, Colonel.
You're very welcome.
And after the wine was drunk and venison devoured, and the fingers dipped in the lemon water, after that evening of old friends anew, after that, there was a new day. And there was this.
Good morning, Mr. Stokes.
Good morning, Quimby. Is,
The mistress is in the sitting room. She's waiting for you.
Thank you, my man. Josie.
Edward. Oh, wait, Edward. I was out this morning early shopping. Here, I bought something for you. Open it.
Josie. Little stick pin. There was no need for you to...
Oh, yes, there was. Now be quiet.
Wild, storm-tossed lovers you might care to eavesdrop upon, since they'll give you a better understanding of the currents sweeping these two upon violent shores, like this one.
The best champagne in New York. Now take off your little shoe. Here, use my mallet, dear. This croquet has brought the pink to your cheeks. Make your shot.
As is always the case in skullduggery of this sort, there is an in the meanwhile in the Park Avenue home of Colonel James Fisk, Jr., the colonel and his lady. The children have been tucked away for the night, the servants snug in their quarters, as were the animals. A quiet hour. An hour for a man for family discussion.
You fool! You cheat! Blackguard!
Dear, the children, you'll awaken them.
A woman like that!
Have you no compassion in your heart? She's a widow.
Ha, ha!
Alone in the world. I am but her advisor.
Ha, ha! Now that's all you are.
What are you talking about?
What all of New York is saying.
And that is?
Ha, ha!
And that is?
The most concerned is the last to know.
Know what?
Your precious widow and Edward Stokes.
What?
Ha, ha, Colonel! Now you know what I've been through. The aggravation, the shame, the heartache, the sorrow, the unrequited love.
Where is,
The mistress is in her boudoir.
Go awaken her.
Who is it, Quimby?
It's... not Mr. Stokes, ma'am.
Why, good evening, Colonel.
What's this I hear about you and that scamp, Edward Stokes?
Why, what have you heard?
That you and he...
Who told you that?
My wife.
The Colonel.
Then it's true.
I love him very much.
Josie.
Go back to your wife.
I warn you.
You warn me? You, Colonel?
Listen to me. I'll ruin you.
Please. Go home.
You and Edward Stokes. Mark my word. I'll ruin the both of you. My promise to you, if it takes the rest of my life.
The Colonel left. The colonel was driven to his club, where the colonel spent the night. And the next morning, early, the colonel began the final week of his life.
You are listening to Crime Classics and your host, Thomas Highland. A dead man's coat is the key to a killing. Its disappearance starts Mr. and Mrs. North off on a merry, mysterious manhunt tomorrow night. Don't miss Coat of Arms, a matter of murder confronting Pam and Jerry North. Tomorrow, listen to For John Lund is Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, the insurance sleuth with the action-packed expense account. And now once again, Thomas Highland and the second act of Crime Classics, and his report to you on the checkered life and sudden death of Colonel James Fisk, Jr. I'd like to set the coordinates for you again. Take a reading of exactly where we are in time. The year is 1872. The place is New York City. Now, 1872 was a vintage year for pearls in the bottom of champagne glasses, of fatted railroad stocks, and the diamond harvest was spectacular. The term rags to riches was coined on a day in this year, when a raggedy sewing machine girl was summoned from her chores, taken by the hand, dressed in silk, then released into a gilded cage. New York City at this time was a center for many similar dramas, one of which we're concerning ourselves with. Colonel James Fisk, Jr. had compassion for a widow named Josie Mansfield. Josie Mansfield had compassion for the colonel's friend, Edward Stokes. The colonel, upon hearing of this arrangement, immediately went into action, in a colonel-like manner.
Your Honor, I want to swear out a warrant for the arrest of Edward S. Stokes for embezzlement.
Why, certainly, Colonel. We'll have the culprit in jail in no time at all.
Inside with you, Mr. Stokes.
Jailer.
Yes, sir, Mr. Stokes.
Do you have the list?
Yes, sir. Your living room furniture, the portraits, and the bed. I'll have them here in no time at all.
Edward Stokes was a model prisoner for 2 days. He was then released when the charge against him was dropped. Not to be outdone, he went into action in a manner which gained the plaudits of his cronies.
Your Honor, I want to swear out a warrant for the arrest of Colonel James Fisk, Jr. for false imprisonment.
Why, certainly, Mr. Stokes. We'll have the culprit in jail in no time at all.
Jailer?
Yes, sir, Colonel. The living room furniture, your easy chair in the library, and the bed. I'll have them here in no time at all.
War of nerves, tactics, and strategies, and reprisals. And the real victors, the gatherers of the loot, the lawyers. So the Colonel and Mr. Stokes called a truce, waved white napkins at each other across a gleaming table at Delmonico's.
Stokes, I think we both acted like children.
I agree with you, Colonel.
Let me fill your glass. Yeah, a toast. To a friendship.
Our friendship, Colonel.
Enough of jails and lawyers and arguments. Life is too short.
I'll drink to that, too. Colonel?
And we can settle our affairs like men.
I'll drink to that, too.
No, wait. Let's settle our affairs first.
Delighted.
There is only one thing which stands in our way.
Obviously.
Josie Mansfield.
You're right.
Stokes, you're not ever to see her again.
Colonel?
You agree?
Colonel, you're a fat, stupid fool.
I accept that. But you're never to see Josie Mansfield again.
Josie told me that if I saw you, I was to tell you you are a fat, stupid fool. And you are.
I warned you once, Stokes. I'm not going to warn you again.
Then I'll warn you. If you make any trouble, Colonel, you won't live to enjoy it. My promise to you.
Good evening, Mr. Stokes. The mistress is in the parlor.
Josie.
Josie. Josie, wake up.
Oh, Edward. How nice, Edward.
Dearest, listen. It's important. Are you awake?
Well, of course, I just drowsed off. I was reading and waiting for you, and now you're here.
Josie, listen. It's about Colonel Fisk.
Oh, please don't talk about him. Not now.
He's ruined me.
What are you talking about?
I am a pauper.
You? Well, you're one of the wealthiest young men in
No, no, not now. I don't have a penny.
What happened?
The stocks I had, all my assets.
Well?
The colonel forced down the value of the Erie Railroad stocks, wiped me out.
Oh, Edward, I'm so sorry.
Josie.
Yes?
I'm poor now. Do you want me to leave? Never come back?
Darling Edward. Darling, dearest Edward.
Josie.
We'll beat him. We'll destroy the colonel, you and I, together.
That's impossible. He's too powerful.
He's a weakling.
What?
I can prove he's a weakling. He writes letters.
Letters?
I saved them. And that's not all.
What do you mean?
Dealings he's had. Dishonest business dealings. Would you like to look at them?
Dearest Josie, I love you so much. So that's why I thought it more discreet to hire a cab, Colonel. Surely you understand.
I must tell you, Stokes, when I agreed to meet you, to ride with you in a hired hack at night...
I explained the necessity of secrecy, Colonel.
As indeed you did not. You merely said secrecy. That is why I must tell you I am confused. Have you made another decision about Josie?
A tentative decision, Colonel.
Tentative?
Yes, it depends on you.
Oh?
I need money.
I know.
Badly.
I know.
Colonel?
Yes?
You love Josie very much, don't you?
I understand you now, Stokes.
I thought you would.
Do you want me to reimburse you for the money you've lost?
$250,000.
I know. In return for which, you'll give up Josie.
That's right.
I'm sure there must be a name for you, Mr. Stokes.
I'm sure of it.
I had an experience last night. I had dinner at home with my wife. The children were with us. After dinner, I played on the floor with my children. I heard them laugh. I heard my wife laugh, too. And I laughed, too. And there was no other meaning behind my laughter except enjoyment of my family.
Very touching.
And rewarding.
Then you're not interested in my proposal.
I'll get off at the next corner, Mr. Stokes. Tell the driver.
Of course. Next corner, cabbie.
Well, Mr. Stokes, give my regards to Josie. Tell her I'm truly sorry for what's going to become of her. Goodbye, Mr. Stokes.
Colonel, wait.
I'm sorry, we have nothing else to talk about.
Except the letters.
What letters?
You have a rich way with words, Colonel. I congratulate you.
I don't understand.
Oh, of course you do. The letters you wrote to Josie.
I see.
All of them.
I see.
They could ruin you.
Perhaps.
I remember one of the letters opened with, "Dearest Josie, my poor little widow, your sad tears still on my shoulder."
$10,000.
And another, "Dear Josie, this morning I was at Tammany Hall, and with Boss Tweed, arrangements were made to relieve the city."
$10,000.
$250,000 for the letters, Colonel.
$10,000, or you may publish them or do what you want with them.
Surely you're not serious.
Good night, Mr. Stokes.
$10,000.
Bring your letters to me tomorrow, and you shall get your money. Good night.
An old almanac I have occasion to call on now and then says that Saturday, the 6th of January, in the year 1872, is the 66th anniversary of the Volunteer Fire Department of Roanoke, Virginia. Also, it predicts the day will be cold and clear with high westerly winds. So, we'll make an assumption. On a cold, clear Saturday morning, buffeted by the high westerly winds, Mr. Edward Stokes made his way to the Wall Street office of Colonel Fisk. Here he received more coldness and $10,000. Here he deposited with the colonel a stack of letters, wrapped in blue ribbon and sachet. Then Edward Stokes called on Josie Mansfield. He told her of the transaction. We must imagine that Josie's reaction went something like this.
You idiot! You bumbling, spineless idiot!
But, Josie...
I should have known better than to trust you with those letters.
But $10,000 is better than nothing.
If you'd had the courage...
He told me $10,000 or nothing.
If you'd had the courage, he would have given you everything he owned. Why, the mere possession of the letter dated June 16th, 1871, would have been a fortune 10 times the amount you got.
But...
But what?
You have your jewels, this house. Surely you must be worth nearly $1 million yourself.
I love you, dear Edward, but that's my money. You'll just have... What is it, Quimby?
Miss Annie Wood wishes to speak with you.
Tell her I'm busy.
She said it's extremely urgent.
Extremely urgent.
Hello, Annie.
Josie, dear Josie, and dear Mr. Stokes.
Hello.
The judge came to see me for lunch a little while ago.
Judge? What are you talking about?
Judge Tripler.
Well, I don't see...
He just come from court. He just signed a warrant.
Yes?
For the arrest of dear Mr. Stokes on the charge of blackmail.
Colonel Fisk.
Yes. The dear judge told me that the colonel asked him to sign such a warrant. Josie.
Yes?
We'll be seeing each other more often, won't we, dear Josie?
Publication of the time. I quote, "The next that was seen of Edward Stokes, as far as is known, was at a few minutes before 4 o'clock, when he was walking carelessly up and down the main corridor of the Grand Central Hotel on the parlor floor. This corridor is one story above the street, is parallel with Broadway, and at its northern end is reached by a staircase from the street. Passing and repassing the head of the staircase, Stokes glanced furtively down the stairs. It was nearly 4 o'clock when Colonel James Fisk, Jr. drove up in a carriage to the door. Stepping out of his carriage and walking briskly across the pavement, he passed through the outer door of the hotel. When he had done so, he was heard to inquire for a certain Annette Latour. He was told she was in and started up the stairs.
Good afternoon, Colonel.
Stokes, don't!
You ruin me.
For the love of heaven, someone help me!
Edward Stokes was restrained a block away. The colonel didn't die immediately. He was lifted by 3 bellhops and taken to chambers supplied by the management. Doctors were called, and the colonel joked with them, as he joked with his many friends who came to visit him. He joked with everybody. The next day, in the middle of a joke, he died. Thomas Stokes pleaded self-defense. He was convicted of manslaughter in the 3rd degree. Josie Mansfield spent her remaining days with her aunt, Miss Annie Wood. In just a moment, Thomas Highland will tell you about next week's Crime Classics. This Wednesday night, screen hero Jeff Chandler plays a young man hired for an important job, a job of guarding the very much alive body of a notorious gangster.
Hear the exciting details in the story entitled The Web on your Playhouse on Broadway. It's presented by CBS Radio this Wednesday night on most of these same stations. And here again is Thomas Highland.
Next week, Long Melford in the county of Suffolk in England. The year? 1739. My report to you will be on the shrapneled body of Charles Drew, Sr. Thank you. Good night.
James Fisk, Jr., tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann, and the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. James Fisk, Jr. was played by William Johnstone. Featured in the cast were Mary Jane Croft, Martha Wentworth, Steve Roberts, Harry Bartell, Paula Winslow, and Charles Calvert. Bob Lamond speaking. Stay tuned now for Gary Moore with Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. And remember, your news is always accurately reported when it comes from the CBS Radio Network.
Listening to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Join us again next week at the same time on the mighty KONR. Don't forget to play What Will Mrs. Thompson Say at LGAB.com. Now, stay tuned for the Sasquatch Report.